Welcome to the Golden Mike Podcast, where personal growth simply isn't enough. I'm your host, Mark Cordone, a positive psychology coach, a do-gooder from the island of Misfit Toys, who founded the Joy Revolution. Each week, I'll rap with an extraordinary guest doing extraordinary things through their own revolutionary work to talk about the ups, downs, and all arounds of life. It's my mission to provoke and empower you through increased joy and inspire you to spark your own revolution to change history for the better. Welcome to the most serious happiness podcast in this multiverse. Welcome to the Golden Mike Podcast. How do your parents feel about like things like what you're doing right now and your podcast and stuff like that? Have you become the black sheep?
Well, so there's two podcasts in the family. My son has his own podcast called Younger, Smarter, Better, like shameless mom plug here. And his whole thing is teaching kids and young adults all the things that we need to know in life, but nobody actually teaches you. So, you know, goal setting, financial management, all the rest of it. Reason why I'm saying this, not just to toot his horn, but also because when it came to setting up my parents' phone, I set it up so that they could get the newest episodes of Younger, Smarter, Better. I did not set it up for them to get Recovering Church Girls. it's interesting because I think there's a lot of different layers to the relationships and to the dynamics. When I first started talking about, hey, there's some pretty big issues in the church that are hurting women, and I need to talk about them. Yeah. The first reply or the first, you know, response I got was overwhelming support. And absolutely, you are 100% right. They need to be held accountable and, you know, there needs to be healing and wholeness here. And my mom brought all three of us to tears when she said, I've been meaning to tell you for a long time and I haven't known how to, but I wanted to apologize for the way that you were raised. And I just want you to know that we were doing the best that we could with what we had in that moment.
Sure.
And that was like mind blowing to me because of the three of us, like I'm the woo woo one. I'm the one that does the self-development work and the personal deep stuff. So she was using words that I was very familiar with, but it was the first time I had heard her say something like that. And that was a year or two ago. Since then, those conversations are a little different.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Meaning kind of polar opposite?
Well, not so much. It just kind of depends. Like just recently, my dad had said something about, you know, they've got a new pastoral team in their church. And he's like, oh, I think you'd really like this guy. You know, he was really clear about the idea that, you know, someone had mentioned something about the coronavirus being a bad thing sent from God as a judgment. And he's like, you know, he was really clear about saying that's absolutely not the case. And, you know, that's not the God we serve and different things like that. And I'm like, well, yeah, Dad, that's cool. But I just, you know, like, I agree with you. Like, I'm really glad that that's what he said. But I also need to put you on pause for a second, because I remember growing up being told that all these things that were happening in the world were indeed because God was angry with us. And, you know, just that idea of, I have said some terrible things in my life, and I still remember to this day, like I can feel the pit in my stomach. I made a terrible comment about Hurricane Katrina and the fact that it was New Orleans, you know, what do you expect type of a thing. And what a terrible thing to say. And of course, I don't believe that at all anymore, but that's the environment that I was in and I had been raised in for decades. So that was a really interesting conversation. This was recently, like 2 or 3 days ago. And in that moment, my dad said, he's like, well, he's like, we were
so
in the wrong church.
A little racist.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But for him to say we were in the wrong church, that was huge. That was absolutely huge to hear him say that. So we're getting there. Like, you know, sometimes we can have those conversations and other times it just has to be a very quick and thick boundary that says, I don't think we should talk about this right now. And
understood.
Finding, you know, a chance to respect each other in that and find a way back to our relationship that isn't going to be combatant in any way.
Yeah.
How much do you still feel hurt by this?
I don't know that I personally feel hurt at this point. I think it's more, ironically enough, the idea of this righteous anger. Like, I am fed the fuck up with the whole system, with the oppression, with the idea that racism is so inherent, that sexism is so inherent in the culture. That's where I get really just enough is enough. If we know better, we need to do better.
Okay.
And if we don't know better, then let's have that conversation.
Let the virus take its course.
Oh my God, that's terrible.
That's what my pastor would say. Let the virus take its course.
Oh my gosh. What's wrong with these people? But then that's where I get caught, because what I am so conscious of myself is, if I truly believe that each person has the right to an individual spiritual experience, that means that I can take no judgment in it whatsoever.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, fuck this questioning route for a second. I'm literally throwing it away. We're going to go here for a couple more minutes. I want to know your thoughts on this hypocrisy in the church, in which some of the people who preach the highest level things when it comes to being pious, when it comes to sort of the tenets of the church, and they go and do the most heinous shit. And we don't just see it in the church, but we see it in politics and stuff like that. What? I'm wrapping my brain around that, but in so many ways, why do you think stuff like that comes up?
I think a lot of it comes back to the non-acceptance of self. And I think that, so let me sidebar for a second. You know that I'm working on the book, Recovering Church Girls.
And oh my God, you're a plug master.
No, that wasn't my intention. Hold on, stick with me for a second. Because what I want to tell you is where I found myself getting tripped up when I was writing was, it was really easy to identify the places where the church has really fucked us over. And to then draw the lines between, okay, here's how the patriarchy has infiltrated the church, and here's how that has then trickled down to how we see ourselves and how we show up in the world. So taking from the purity culture to the patriarchy to martyrdom as the highest value, all these different components, and then tracing that to how it impacts us individually, mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. Where I was getting stuck was this idea of, I can't leave us here. You know, back to that idea of post-traumatic growth, there's so much more to experience on the other side of that. However, the biggest issue that we have to address in order to get there is that living in this environment, living with this code of values that, frankly, I think is completely inherent, the idea that... How do I want to sum this up? The idea that we're fragmented because we've been told to value something that isn't truly in alignment with who we are.
Yeah.
So the first piece is a reunification of who we are and an acceptance of who we are. So to answer your question, I think that's why we're seeing so much crazy stuff, is because it's like this idea of having a form-fitting bodysuit and it being three sizes too small. So if you see, all the women who have ever had to put Spanx on know what I'm talking about here. As you are needing to adjust...
Hey, you know I wear Spanx too.
So. Well, as you're needing to adjust, it's like, where does everything go? And if you don't have space for it to go within this container, it's going to blow out somewhere else. That's my analogy. There you go.
That's a fucking mic drop right there. Yeah. That gives me the permission to move forward now with your personal life. I just felt like we hadn't touched. I mean, I think that we can talk more about it, and when it comes up, I will. You know, also then there's Tanya the person, you know, obviously the very philosophical, thoughtful person. But then there's you as mom, there's you as partner, right? And your first marriage, you both had met each other in the church, mm-hmm. right? Children raised to believe. To believe the same tenets?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. They were named specifically to carry on the Christian ideologies.
Okay, and so that prayer that your parents said about you, you guys were saying about your own kids then, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was deeply in this world for decades.
Okay, okay, and also at the same time, you had unconscious things going on in terms of unconscious resistance, and you just didn't know what. And at the time, you couldn't even spot it. It was right. So unconscious.
Well, and I would say, I mean, there were several points of dissonance even from my childhood. Like, I remember being 4 years old, sitting in Sunday school, being told to bring my unsaved friends to church. And I remember looking around the room going, I'm not allowed to have any friends who aren't already here. But how can I be a good girl and bring people to church if I don't have anybody who's not here? Like, I couldn't recognize how to bring those pieces together. So I definitely had moments like that all throughout my childhood and into adulthood. But from a, you know, all appearances, then yeah, I was in it for decades.
I like it. It's almost like a multi-tiered marketing campaign. Hey kids, bring your unsaved friends to work, and we'll level you up to gold status.
I'm telling you, you think that's we haven't even talked about the Bible drills, Mark. The idea that there would be races to find Bible verses, and they were called sword drills.
Oh my God, I gotta hear this shit.
Sword, you know, the sword of the spirit type thing. So anyway, yeah.
I got to hear this shit.
I mean, everything revolved around the church, and everything in the church revolved around this fundamental belief system that we were the good ones because we were saved and we were God's chosen, and everyone else both needed us and needed our pity. So there was very much an us versus them type of idea.
Oh, it's so us versus them.
Yeah,
it's
huge.
It's so ivory tower-ish, you know.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, oh my gosh, it is really, really, it is really scary when it's us versus them, and then you're in your ivory tower, you know, because then look what happens when the ivory tower starts to burn. People start to do some really drastic shit.
Yeah, people are hurt. Are hurt, and that's what it comes back down to. Is like going, okay, the idea is to love people. Are we doing that? Okay, but we're supposed to be changing topics. What happened?
You're BV-ing
them. I guarantee I'm
the
one that took it back. We might have to play that one back. Double check.
So I have no idea. I have no idea if we're going to get through this damn first husband of yours, you know. But what I want to get to is, okay, so what led to the downfall of that? How about that? Let's go there.
Well, I think there were two main pieces, one of which is mine to own. The other is his. So I'm not going to speak to the second one because that, as much as it is my story in that it impacted me tremendously and probably still does to a certain extent, it's not my story to tell. The first one, though, I can take full ownership for it because it's absolutely on me. I remember early in our marriage, I'd say within the first year, let's see, set the stage. No kids yet. I am desperately lonely. We've moved halfway across the country because he is in a graduate program. He had bypassed his senior year of undergrad to get into this grad program. It was one that, you know, had all sorts of symbiotic relationships because, again, it's another religious institution because we met at a Christian college. So we're back on the East Coast. I'm working in special events at what was then Fox Family Channel, which is now ABC Family, and loving my job, absolutely loving my job. But it's just me and my boss, who is the VP of events. So I have no community, haven't found a church home yet. And of course, growing up, like, that was always the solution. So surely that's what we need, is to find a church home. But he is having the time of his life because he's got all of these grad school friends that, you know, he's able to really engage with. And I remember he got his syllabus, and every single book, I think except for one, that was assigned to him was already on my bookshelf and already highlighted and dog-eared and all the rest of it, because I was the one who was into the business development stuff and really enjoying. Like, I remember Good to Great. That was when that was at its heyday. And I was like, oh, you don't have to buy that one, I've already got it. That kind of a thing.
And you just have to read the earmarks.
Exactly. Yeah, just skim through the highlights. It'll be good. Yeah. So this was, it was going to be the night that I was going to meet his crew for the first time. And I remember we were going to Joe's Crab Shack in Virginia Beach, and we were crossing the street at the crosswalk. And I remember as we were crossing the street, I remember him saying, you know, you can be really intimidating when it comes to business settings and social things. And I just, you know, these are my people. I just need you to dial it down. I just need you to, ooh, you know, be really aware of this.
Okay.
And I remember in that moment, just having that kind of out of body experience for a second. Like, for a minute, I was up above us watching us walk across the street, and I could see everybody hanging out at the deck at Joe's Crab Shack. And I just remember having this complete moment of, what did he just say? And
was that the first time you had heard him say something remotely close to that?
Absolutely. I mean, keep in mind, like, this is very much true to expectations of a complementarianist marriage. The woman cannot be too big, cannot be too shiny, cannot attract attention, cannot do anything that would take away from the leadership of the man. My entire role in life is to support him.
So what made you at this particular point, with all the life indoctrination you received, what made it so jarring for you?
My answer.
Because it sounds like it would. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. So I heard him on some level, and my immediate reply was, okay, honey, whatever you need. That's where I can trace things back and say, right there, that's that moment where I denied myself. I denied my own existence and having a seat at the table of this relationship and, you know, being valid in who I am. I chose to keep the peace over my self-worth.
Mm.
And that, as far as I'm concerned, that is the moment that I am completely culpable of for what I had to say, you know, as far as the marriage falling apart.
Mm. Wow. Okay. So you can't untake that back.
No.
You can't untake those thoughts back. And really, that was the beginning of the unwinding.
It was. I mean, it took several years for that to really happen. But I remember that same, you know, within a month or two, I remember crying myself to sleep, and just, I would take a bath and I would run the water so I could cry and not be found out that I was crying. Mm-hmm. But I was just so desperately lonely. Like, this whole marriage thing was not what I was told it was going to be. Well, gee, I wonder why, because I just said that I wouldn't be myself. But then, you know, on top of that, of just feeling that just something was off and I didn't know what it was, and really thinking a baby would fix it. I really truly thought that that's what we needed, right. And that's why we weren't happy yet. You know, or whatever the case might be, is, well, we haven't had kids yet. We need to have a family. And I always felt like I was comparing myself against my mom's timeline. She didn't go to college. She met my dad when she was, 17, married when they were 18, and had me at 19, somewhere right around there. Very, very short, you know, compression on that one. But I remember thinking, you know, I was 25 when I got married, 25, something like that. But I remember thinking, like, I'm so late. I'm so behind.
Wow.
So just that, I know, right? Crazy. And now I'm talking to my kids of like, if you want to wait till you're 30, like I am totally cool with that, by the way, just so you know.
Yeah.
If you don't want to get married, that's fine too. Like whatever you guys want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really interesting. You don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but do you find that in the co-parenting, you found a nice copacetic place where he gets to keep, or he gets to parent using his values and you get to parent using yours?
We have now. The first few years, it was pretty difficult.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is we both needed to figure out who we were outside of the definition of our relationship. And at the time, we were both still working at the same corporation as well. So that's like super awkward, especially because everybody from that business went to the same church. So we're talking like layers upon layers. It's very, very complicated.
My assumption is that once you got divorced, you stopped going to that church.
No, actually, I stayed part of that community for another several years after. You might be thinking of the second husband. That's where that one happened.
Okay. And also in the church, is there any stigma on people who've been divorced?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, not as stringently perhaps as other denominations, or specifically, you know, the Catholic community I know is very anti-divorce.
Yep.
So, you know, I'm sure it's a little bit lighter, but it's still there. So stigma light.
Stigma light was there. Okay.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. And I know, I don't know that it was intentional. Like, that's the thing. I think that so much of all of this experience, there are so few people that are fully aware and fully conscious of the impact of their choices and, you know, how they're showing up in that moment. I don't think enough people are paying attention to the impact that they're making on other human beings.
Sure. That's huge.
Hey, it's Mark. I hope you're digging the Golden Mike podcast. If you have or are just starting your own revolution fueled by joy, there's a site I created for you. If you, like me, believe that personal growth is simply not enough, if you, like me, are committed to changing history for the better in both micro and macro ways, check out joyrevolution.com. In there, you'll find an archive of our over 200 Golden Mike Live Facebook shows and, of course, our podcast that you're currently listening to. Check out the blogs highlighting how positive psychology and joy theory apply to your everyday life. There's even some cool clips from our Joy Revolution course geared towards influencers, speakers, writers, and change agents. It's all there. Go to joyrevolution.com. That's joyrevolution.com. Let's get back to the episode.
So let's talk about person number two. about hubby two. Where did you meet him? How did this go? How did this one go?
Well, that company that I talked about that I had worked at with the first husband, I met husband number two at that same company.
Oh my God.
I know. All roads around here lead back to this.
Come on, man. That's an obvious loop.
But
it's all good. It's all
things
good.
Things I learned later. No, but we'd fallen out, you know, of touch for quite a few years. And I had reached out at one point in time because he was teaching at a local university. And I was asking if he had any interns for the event experience, because I have had great college interns from another location. And you know, he never answered, and I never really thought anything of it. It was no big deal. It was just a, you know, professional question. And then years went by, and he reached out, you know, kind of as a, I'm so sorry, I didn't circle back. I'm in the middle of a divorce and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Now, I had known him in his first marriage. as a really great stepdad. And I remember there was an event that was like a picnic or something that a ton of families were at from this office. And I remember saying to him, because it must have been after my first divorce, because I was already single momming it. And I remember saying, you know, if I ever decide to remarry, I'll have to get pointers from you on this whole step parent thing, because like you seem to really have it down. Never in a million years would I have thought that I would later be marrying him. So, you know, ironic at best. So fast forward, the dating relationship was pretty short, which tends to be my MO, which is probably why I'm not in a relationship right now.
like a swept you off your feet type of thing?
Well, here's the thing about me. I am not difficult to find relationship or to find myself in relationship. It's whether or not I choose to stay around. And I don't say that in the idea of like, you know, like that didn't come out quite right. But I guess if you put it in context of like moving all the time and, you know, being a fast mover in business and philosophy and all these other things, like there's a lot going on. So the person that can keep up with me is kind of a rare bird. So there's that. But from the flip side of that, there needs to be a grounding component, you know, that type of a thing. Sure. So I say that more in the sense of as a cautionary tale. I am an eternal romantic. I will always be a romantic. I'll always be an optimist. It's just who I am. And at the same time, I don't know that I value marriage itself the way that I have been taught to. I value partnership. Yeah. And, you know, that is huge to me. The marriage, I've got some questions on.
Yeah, absolutely.
So none of that was relevant at this point in time in history of what I'm talking about. That's who I am now. But in this moment, I thought marriage was the answer. And his wife had cheated on him. And
the answer to what?
Well, just the answer to everything, specifically within the context of the relationship. Like his wife had cheated. So he was a mess. He was completely fragile. He was broken. And I thought that I could help fix that by, you know, coming in and being that person. And there's this whole other context that was going on. He had not been a member of the church community, and I brought him to our church community.
Oh, so, come on, dude.
I'm telling you, I was in the thing for a long time. It was part of my fabric of being.
This guy, when he was at the most vulnerable. Oh, my God.
Well, last thing I heard, he was still there and thriving. Who knows? I mean, that's like years ago. I've totally lost that.
Yeah, he's thriving because he can't get out.
No, he's already remarried and all the rest of it. So he's fine.
I'm just kidding.
Or at least I hope he's fine. I don't know. Who cares? Yeah. But so all of that to say. No, I'm just saying in terms of like boundaries, you know? Okay, so nutshell version. It was a really short relationship. He had two children, from his first marriage, and the step-parent component was really difficult. You talked about the idea of parenting to your own individual values. We did not have the same set of values. And, one of the children, had a serious lying issue, and it impacted the family dynamic. And it was just really difficult to navigate because we weren't on the same page. So, you know, I don't think that that's the cause of the end of the marriage, but I think how we handled it, you know, definitely could be. But really what it came down to is, at the time I was doing, I was still doing wedding and event planning and doing floral design. And this was my first time ever signing up as a wire service for flower arrangement delivery for Valentine's Day and Mother's Day. And let me tell you, florists around the country deserve so much love and gratitude for the things that they do for people over those holidays. Right. It was a brutal experience. And I had no idea. It was my first time, you know, in the deep end of the pool on that. Long story short, the Mother's Day rush ended with him saying, "I don't think I have what it takes to be your husband." And that was it. Here's what's interesting, though. is that because he had already become, you know, part of the community with the church, he had said something to the associate pastor, who had actually been incredibly helpful for me during the context of the first divorce and has been, you know, just a member of our community and really from my family, as far as myself and my kids, for these last, you know, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years, whatever it had been in this in-between time. So yeah. He sets up a meeting for us. And I remember, I don't know that I'll ever forget this, but I remember sitting in his office, in the pastor's office. And I remember him saying, well, husband number two had painted this picture that I was choosing the business over our blended family. And that I was prioritizing, you know, working or what have you. What he didn't mention was that he had a financial requirement for me to contribute to that my business in and of itself was not making by that point. So I was working 2 part-time jobs along with doing my business, along with the parenting of my own children and the step-parenting of his in order to try and make all this work. None of that came into conversation, ironically enough.
Did you make it?
I don't know that I did. I mean, I may have mentioned it quickly in passing, but I don't know how fully aware I was of all the different layers of things that were happening in that moment.
Wow.
So yeah, it felt very unfair. I'm a Libra. Yeah. I like things to be fair. But I couldn't identify what felt unfair. You know what I mean? Like it just like, yeah. This is wrong. This isn't accurate. I'm being bullied, but I don't know how to fix it. You know, with kind of the overall feeling in that moment until we got to the point, the pastor said something along the lines of, if God were asking you to give up your business to save your marriage, would you? And I looked at him and I looked at my now ex-husband and I just had this white hot fire burning just first starting in my gut and just fueling the words. And I was calm and focused. You know, I wasn't, you know, over the top in any way, shape or form, but I was very clear and everything yeah. just felt the sense of absolute calm. And I turned and I looked at each of them and I said, I feel more of God in me when I'm sending a bride down the aisle than I do most of the days I'm in that sanctuary. So first of all, God would never ask me to do this. You're asking the wrong question. And that was it. That was the end of that conversation. And shortly after, it was the end of my time at that church.
Wow.
And I think that was that piece of the, I was being looked at through the lens of what someone else considered to be the ideal way of being a Christian.
Sure. Sure.
So now, much to your point earlier, you know, I wasn't seen in myself in that moment.
No, you weren't seen at all. And it sounded like it had been pent up so much that like you kind of allowed that suppressed part to just kind of take the wheel and say what it needed to say, right?
Yeah, that moment was absolutely a catalyst for me. But I will say that one thing that I needs to be mentioned just for clarity of the timeline, after divorce number one, this would have been 2008, that's when I really got serious about my own commitment to personal yeah. development and growth. And if I hadn't done the work in those several years, I don't know that I would have recognized the signs of abuse that were happening and the, you know, the controlling, the separation from other people, like all of those different little indicators. Yep. I don't think I would have seen them or have recognized the dissonance in myself as quickly as I did had I not done the work prior. So there's a reason why that second one was so short and why also it proved to be the catalyst for me to make another set of changes because I had already been doing the foundational work beforehand.
Well, during those two ex-husbands, what do you remember being some of those aha moments that you were having when you were doing the personal work?
I think a lot of it comes back to self-worth and acceptance mm-hmm. and identity. And the reason why I call this recovering church girls, it's mm-hmm. very similar to the idea of recovering addicts. Mm-hmm. You know, they know, they recognize that it's highly unlikely that they'll ever be able to fully separate from the impact that that thing has on them.
Yeah.
So it's a very similar context in this idea of, I still have issues with self-worth. I still have issues with my identity and who I am. I've always been a workaholic and a people pleaser and a perfectionist. I recognize that those are traits of who I am. They don't necessarily have to be who I am, but that takes work. That takes conscious effort to delineate between the two and to be able to practice pure self-acceptance and pure self-love and self-compassion in the midst of this kind of culture.
Absolutely. Now let's fast forward to the day that you mic dropped on the associate pastor and your ex-husband, or was it, I think it was associate pastor, right? Mm-hmm. You said what you just said. What's running through your head? Like, are you like, yeah, like, is it, oops, or was it like, or was it like, yeah, motherfucker, you know, or like somewhere in between, right? Like, what was like immediately what was running through your head? Or was it just still white hot rage?
I think the first immediate thought after the white hot rage was just that sense of a release of, I don't have to try to be so perfect anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kind of put all the pieces together type of a thing. So I think there was a bit of claiming myself in that moment to say, that's it. I've done enough. I've tried to play it your way for long enough, and we're done now.
Yeah. Yeah. What about when you were lying in bed that night? What was going through your head? Because that couldn't have been a night where you like, or maybe it was, maybe you just, your face hit the bed and you fell right asleep. But like, was that a night where you crawled into bed and you were like, oh, a lot of scenarios were playing in your mind? And I don't know about you, but like when major scenarios happen during the day, like I'll be like, oh, what would have happened if I did this?
Right.
What would have happened if I didn't do this? What would have happened if I choked this person out? What would have happened if I just went along with it? You know, like, Did you go through those scenarios? Like, I'm just really curious, because that was, I can feel the not the pivot, but I can feel the full evolution happening in that one moment in that office. And so there had to be a lot of things processing.
There absolutely were. And I don't know that I could tell you what any of them were now. it's kind of crazy. When I started working on the book, I went back to therapy and I had told my therapist, I'm like, look, I need someone who has not been in this environment with me to help me understand what is strictly because of the church or the church culture or the indoctrination or, you know, the complementarianism, or like, I need to be able to identify what comes where and to have a contrast. So that's why I'm choosing this. And so she's like, okay, well, this is a very well-informed conversation. I was like, well, sure. I know what I need. I just, you know, here's where I'm at. So as we're, you know, unpacking my story and all the rest of it, at one point in time, I remember she stopped writing and she looked at me and she's like, you've experienced a lot of trauma and you're very high functioning.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And like, what's your point? I mean,
that's not my point. So come back, $125, please.
Right. But it was just this weird moment where it was like, it felt like a rubber ball that like just bounced off of me. And I'm just like, yeah. And like, we all have trauma, you know, everyone has something they've got to work through or overcome or what have you. Like, that's the whole idea of finding ourselves in each other's story, to be able to identify with each other and to connect. So I wasn't receiving what she had to say because I was so dismissive of the things that I've experienced. So I say that specifically to come back to this moment. There are years of my life, years, that I don't know exactly what I was thinking or feeling in that moment, or, you know, just like there's some wonky things in my memory. And I think a lot of it has to do with the traumas that I've experienced.
Sure.
Some of it's self-protective, because if I don't need to access that, then I just won't. You know, is that necessarily the healthiest thing? I don't know. But when you asked me earlier, like some of my earliest childhood memories, The only thing that I remember from my childhood are stories that are told to me tied from pictures. I don't remember pretty much anything of my childhood if it didn't have a picture to go with it.
Yeah.
So same thing, you know, processing each one of these, the context of the relationships ending or, you know, what that meant and all those different things. There's only moments that I can hold on to and understand. The vast majority of it's a bit of a black hole.
Yeah. Yeah. And even those moments that you can recall, just like people who wrote the Bible, they're distorted because it's coming through the filter of your own lens, right? Your own filter. And so we all have to recognize that everyone's got those filters. It's not good or bad, you know? Look at these notes here. These things are so screwed up. So I'm gonna freestyle for a second. I know that you brought it up. I know you brought it up for a second earlier on, and you started out by talking about moving 16 times, right? And then how even when you were in the same place, you had to move, you had to shake some shit up, right? and then you even talked about it a little bit with your relationships. Do you feel like the impact of that constant moving, changing, moving here, moving there, like almost getting settled, then getting unsettled, getting settled, then getting unsettled. Do you think that is something that has, for lack of better terms, affected the way that you've been able to show up or not show up in intimate relationships?
I think on the positive aspect, it's helped me respect time more in the sense of recognizing that we're really not promised any time and to be able to be in the moment. It has definitely helped me in that context. I think on the negative side, when I was younger and less aware, absolutely, I'm sure that it influenced me over the past, you know, decade or so worth of all this internal work. I don't think that it has as much of an impact now, and even just within the past few recent years. I think if anything, there's still this sense of a carryover from one of the influences of the evangelical theology. That's this idea of redeem the time for the day is evil. You know, like this, the things that stick in my head after all these years. But just this idea of like, you know, we have to constantly be busy. We have to, you know, it fits that entrepreneurial mold like crazy, this hustle constantly. There's a reason why I'm so wary of that kind of energy is because I've lived it for so long and had to collapse in order to realize, oh, by the way, that's not actually serving me. that's not helpful. But then to be able to choose differently. So I don't know that has a negative aspect now, thankfully. But are there relationships that I burned as a result over the years? Oh, I'm sure. Absolutely.
Sure. Everybody does it, right? Right. Everybody does it. I absolutely love this. We are going into the game show part.
Oh, dear Lord.
This is honoring the court jester Mark that always does the Golden Mike Lives and dances around. By the way, are you liking the new format of the show?
I don't know how you're going to get me to listen to this long of me rambling.
Oh my God. Be quiet. See, I was going to say be quiet, but that might trigger some things up.
No, I'm good. I'm good. Well, it's funny because right before we started recording, you and I were just chatting because that's what we do and just kind of catching up with each other. And you said something about the Tanya that people don't get to see. And I had this moment. I didn't mention it to you in that moment. But I was like, you know, it's no big deal. Like, I'm pretty transparent. I'm pretty vulnerable. I'm an open book. Yeah, whatever. I was like, oh, shit. He delivered on that. So, yeah.
Thanks, Ma. And thanks for showing up. So obviously, you know that you are a master plugger in these things. But I'm a Luddite when it comes to plugging. So that's why I have this game. It's about joy. It's about joy. And through all of those ups and those downs and everything that you've gone through, there's still ways that we've here and now can experience and embody joy, right? And in many ways, even if you were to look at the original scriptures, or the scriptures that were edited, you know, you could go and say that there's an element of promissory joy. My take on it is that joy can be experienced now if you look for the opportunity to do it, you know, and then sometimes not because you're going through trauma, you know. So I want you to complete the sentence, Tanya, and let's see what we come up with. You can make these answers very short, or you can make them long, prose-like. You can sing them. Do whatever you like.
You don't want me to sing.
I'm going to make sure the next time we see each other, we're going to do karaoke.
Oh, then. Dear. Things you should not say out loud to Mark.
Things you should not say out loud. So I wanted to start off with this. Joy smells like?
Joy smells like dark chocolate Ghirardelli brownies right before they come out of the oven.
Oh, love it. Love it. Joy looks like.
I'm going to go with the first answer is the right answer. My kid smiles.
Mm-hmm. You're two for two. You haven't missed one yet. Joy feels like.
Feels like warmth. It feels like the effect of sun on you, where you have both the light and the warmth.
Yeah, I like it. Joy sounds like?
Laughter.
Joy tastes like?
Ooh, those dark chocolate Ghirardelli brownies with a glass of Malbec.
I can't with you. You're the easiest person to shop for now. It's amazing. Now you obviously know that I have a program called the Joy Revolution. This is where we have these internal upheavals, like the upheaval you were talking about with what was going on with your own values, your identity with the church, right? And that's a revolution in and of itself, right? Mm-hmm. But then there's the revolution where you are leading an upheaval in, you know, whether it be through your podcast, you're leading upheavals, whether it be through the events that you're putting on. And it's led in joy. So when I ask you to complete the sentence, my joy revolution is, again, long or short, what is your joy revolution?
My joy revolution is being a catalyst for people to reconnect first with themselves and then with each other.
Amazing. Amazing. Tanya, we're about to wrap it up, but before we do, what are you being called to say right now?
I'm just filled with gratitude for what you are creating, not only with the Joy Revolution and with conversations like these, but for me personally, like set all of that aside for just a second, to be seen and to be heard and accepted and loved. You give such a gift to each person that you get to engage with. And I'm just filled with gratitude for that, for you in this moment. And if there is a way that our conversation can help someone else to be able to connect with themselves, to connect with you, to connect with me, to hear anything in this that sounds like them, that really, it's an incredibly humbling and just a beautiful gift to be given in this moment.
Amazing. Amazing. Tanya Adleta, you've said it all. I'm going to have you back on this show. I have no idea. Next time, it's probably going to be the Thanksgiving marathon special. my goodness. Sorry, I just lost my, it's okay. Edit that out, Joe Fern. Thanks. So essentially, I wanted to thank you for coming on. All of her contacts, her social media, it's all in the show notes. So there's no reason not to get in touch with Tanya if you haven't seen her in you, or you in her. I don't know how that goes. one and the same. I do have one final question before I close the show. And it's this. You started out in a particular church, right? I think you said Pentecostal, like, kind of, right?
Yeah, I was gonna say non-denominational somewhere non-denominational. Over there.
Yeah, it's non-denominational. And then somewhere in the middle of the piece, you went and dropped the woo flag in there. When did this switch over?
Oh, I think it's been an unveiling. Probably. I love how you say this is the last question. I'm like, really? Because this could be a whole nother half an hour right here.
I know.
That's your intention, isn't it?
Maybe.
I would say it's been a slow unveiling. Much like the dissonance early on, there's always been something that has kind of pulled to me from that. When I was a kid, even, I remember that. But it's been now recently, within the past probably 5 or 6 years, that the running joke right now is that I'm like a woo and a half. I'm not complete woo woo, but boy, am I getting awfully close, and I'm really enjoying the process.
Amazing. Okay, now you've said enough. Tanya, all your stuff is in the show notes. I urge everyone to get in touch with her. This has been another episode of The Joy Revolution. For your sake, for my sake, for fuck's sake, start your revolution in light, in love, in shadows, in joy. We're out. See you next time. Thanks for listening in, guys. Take care. Bye. Hope you enjoyed the Golden Mike podcast. There's more good stuff coming your way. But until the next episode, let's stay in touch, yes? Find us on Instagram as TheJoyRev, TheJoyRev. Or communicate with like-minded revolutionaries in our Facebook group. Search The Joy Revolution Underground. And of course, don't forget to check out the classes, articles, blogs, and some serious fun at joyrevolution.com. That's joyrevolution.com. Now, until then, what will you do to change history for the better? Let's go out and play, shall we? Press start to begin.